The Backyard Advantage really is this tribe of people that care. So the 100 investors are included in the tribe. The mentors that I mentioned are included in the tribe. The corporations around the Sacramento region are a part of this tribe. And we do a good job of engaging those folks to understand their skills, their experience levels, and you know how they might be able to add value to our portfolio. So
welcome back to the Ignite podcast. Today, we're delighted to have Mark Haney on the program. I've been waiting a long time to have you on the program, Mark. He's the founder and managing partner for the Growth Factor here in Sacramento, which is a region I happen to live in, but don't have a lot of investments in. So I'm excited to have you on the show. Welcome to the Ignite podcast, Mark.
I am proud to be here, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Well, we'd love to get an intro from you for the audience, for folks that don't know you.
You bet. My name is Mark Haney. And as you mentioned, we founded the Growth Factory about 2.5 years ago. We are an entrepreneurial development group with a venture capital fund attached to it. And we are relentlessly local in focus. So in the last 2 years, we've invested into about 50 companies here locally. And one of our differentiators is that we are building the Backyard Advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And it's based around this culture of love, helping one another. I think that's one of the things that we can get out of a local effort is we end up with a lot of face-to-face time and really getting to know the people that we invest into on a probably a little bit more of a human level. And we're able to activate the corporations in the Sacramento region, a lot of mentorship right here in the Sacramento region. And we've got like 100 investors, all Sacramentans, all wanting to put their money where their town is, so to speak.
I love that. Is it Sacramentans? Is that how we say it?
Sacramentans. Yeah, I don't use that term often, but I believe it's accurate.
Yeah. So Mark is sitting about, 30 minutes north of Sacramento, and I'm about 40, 45 minutes east. So we're practically neighbors, and I've been to some Growth Factory events, which are excellent, by the way, and we've done some poker nights together. And so we're definitely building this really neat community. And I was pleasantly surprised moving out from the Bay during COVID. I'm sitting here in my home office investing in startups. And turns out there's this whole startup scene in my backyard that I wasn't really connected to. So I'm happy to get connected.
Yeah. And your listeners should know, they may not know, that Sacramento is probably a couple hours from the Bay Area, 90 minutes to 2 hours. We're close to Napa. Yep. We're close to Lake Tahoe. And it's a great place to live and raise a family. There's rivers and lakes and all this kind of stuff. So it's not what you might think of when you think of California. It's almost like a Midwest town on the, there's two freeways. One is on the way to Lake Tahoe and the other is on the way to Reno and Truckee. So it's a really nice area.
Yeah, surprisingly nice. I was lucky enough to have family out here. So I knew about it, for 20, 25 years. And every time I came out, I was very just wowed by the nature and the people. And the people are so nice here too. I remember this experience of living in New York City. I was in my 20s working on Wall Street, came here to visit family. And I was like, why are people so nice to me? This is weird. They're trying to sell me something. Like, are they Mormons? Like, what's going on here? Like, they're just super nice. But tell us a little bit about you and how you, founded the Growth Factor. What's kind of your background? And you seem to have been in the region for a long time.
Yeah, I grew up here in a small town, Roseville. Would you probably know it? Your listeners might not know it. It was a railroad town at the time. Now I think it has 150,000 people. I now live in a small town outside of Roseville called Loomis, which is all of the greater Sacramento region.
Yeah.
So I grew up here in the railroad town, and my dad owned a TV shop, and he was entrepreneurial in nature. So I grew up thinking that way at some level. I had a newspaper route when I was a little kid. I ended up with some video stores. We had a dozen video stores, my brothers and I, in the Sacramento region. And we ultimately ended up pivoting into security cameras. And we had a security camera focused enterprise with vertical integration from manufacturer all the way through distribution and direct as well. So after selling 4 out of the 5 companies in 2010, I went through this process of deciding what I wanted to do with my life. And that led me to starting a podcast, making some investments, And there's a strategy behind my investment thesis that is about creating an advantage. And this angel investing led to the growth factory. I think I got invested into about 50 companies. COVID hits, and that's when we hit pause on a number of the things that we were doing. And my team and I decided to launch the growth factory at that point. So that was in really the 2020 timeframe is when the idea began getting hatched. And then we launched it a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think I remember hearing the story that you guys were formulating the whole thing and then COVID hit.
And yeah, then, what had happened is I had this thesis. I don't know if you've ever heard of the term Keiretsu. Have you heard that term before? It's a family. Yeah. It's a family of companies that have common ownership, and it ends up giving them an advantage. A lot of my business was doing business in Japan, so it's a Japanese word. And everything I do, as I mentioned, I'm always trying to find this advantage to it, this the secret sauce. And really, if you I began talking about on my show and in my backyard about what if we had 100 millionaire business partners that all loved each other? What kind of synergy might we create? And what might that synergy do if we focused relentlessly local? And what kind of impact could we make on Sacramento? And so this was really my money at that time. And I had employees that helped me with the podcast and doing accounting things because I had a bunch of companies. So that led to the pause. The COVID led to the pause. And one of my teammates, Rick, and another teammate, Monique, and I decided let's do the growth factory and let's get it out of my backyard, Mark Haney's backyard, and make it the collective backyard of the Sacramento region. So we have, as I mentioned, a number of investors, 100 investors plus. We have 100 mentors roughly, and we have civic partnerships with local corporations like the Sacramento Kings. There's a municipality, SMUD, who you know, but the basically City of Roseville, City of Rockland, El Dorado County.
Yeah. So many really get all these townships and all the whole community around the region involved in growing these startups, the growth factory, right?
And yeah, in Sacramento,
I think growth factory. I mean, you guys are you the only accelerator in the region?
There are some other accelerators in the region. We are the only one currently that really has a fund associated with it. So that's kind of a differentiator. There's people that start doing these accelerators, but unless you have some money behind it, they're not quite as attractive.
So is this the standard? Tell us about the program. And is this like kind of a YC standard deal, 7% for 125 kind of thing? Or
no, there's nothing standard about it. We're because there are... You know, we're dealing with a very small geographic region. We had this, as we went and rallied investors, we let them know that we probably, because we're going to be staying local, we're going to need to customize our programming and our investment thesis, but they're all pre-seed and seed stage. We have a few in the Series A realm, but they're early. And then they go through and we do we started off with more of an accelerator program where it's specific programming for startups, but we determined that we're seeing clusters begin to form in GovTech and a few other areas, and we're seeing more synergy getting out of the, we'll call it the traditional programming for how to be a startup, and really customizing it. And one of the big things I mentioned at the beginning, that it's based around this culture of love, this backyard advantage. And so we do a really good job of understanding the needs along the way for these startups. And the love really is engineering wins, connecting dots, opening up doors, and really making, taking some of the, I guess, the friction out of getting customers and getting new investors and so on, and really making that a little bit easier to get things done. And one of the premises of this is, in a town like Sacramento, which has been overlooked by venture capital in many ways for a long time, it's beginning to change. But one of the things that it does for economic development for the region is it brings outside investment into the region because we have great startups. And
great
so it
talent,
brings
up, right? I mean, you have tons of people. Almost everybody I meet is, you know, they went to Cal or Davis or UCLA or Stanford or some, you know, amazing California school, or other great universities, or they lived for 5, 10, 15 years in the Bay Area, and they came out here to raise their kids. And so you just have a tremendous amount of talent here in the region that you can tap into.
We do, and it's getting stronger. People like you have moved here from the Bay Area. What your audience may not know is California, generally speaking, has actually losing population. Sacramento region has gained population, and a lot of that is because during COVID, people like yourself moved here because of the quality of life, quality of, you know, the value of homes is a little bit better, a lot better than in Silicon Valley. So it really is a great place to raise a family. And in today's world, you can, like you're doing, you can build your business from anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely, you know, I can't imagine. I mean, I'd have to be in Silicon Valley 5 years ago to do what I do, you know, be an early stage investor. And but now with Zoom, I can just talk to people. You know, I just talked to somebody in Africa this morning and then India in the late morning. And then, you know, so it's just all over the world. You just never know. I'd love to dig into the GovTech side of things, right? Obviously, Sacramento is the capital of California. And so it would make a lot of sense that anyone trying to sell into the government would try to domicile here. And this is one of the biggest state governments, if not the largest, right?
Yeah. And you called me the managing partner too. So what we have is we have a nonprofit, and I could dive into that. We have a nonprofit arm that really focuses on community development and partnerships. And we have a big event every year called GFX. And then we have a for-profit venture capital arm, all under the Growth Factory brand. And so just kind of putting that out there a little bit, but in terms of GovTech, you call me the managing partner. I'm not the managing partner of the fund. I'm kind of the overall founder and maybe the vision behind the fund, but I'm not specifically managing the fund. My business partner, Rick Spencer, along with Nikki Sims, they actually manage the fund. And so they are in a little bit better touch with, you know, each of the portfolio companies. Right. But one of the things that we're seeing is what we were expecting is that there would be some companies that wanted to locate here because of state, you know, the state government, either here or Washington, D.C. and something or something like that. So we are seeing a bit of a cluster there. But one of the companies that comes to mind is called Open Grants. And Open Grants is a platform, and I believe they might even be based out of El Dorado Hills in your area, too, that really connects people who need grants with grantors and takes some of the hassle out of that process. So there are a few more like that. Definitely a lot of stuff in AI as well.
Yeah. And then what's, tell us, I'd love to dig into the Growth Factory itself. So is it a standard like 12, 16 week kind of program, or kind of, can we give more details? Maybe there's some entrepreneurs out there that are interested in coming to Sacramento, and why would they come and kind of what's that pitch? And what's the program look like?
Our first two cohorts were 1 year programs, and we determined through that process that we weren't going to do the cookie cutter approach where you have a 1 year. We thought the 1 year program would be very, very helpful, where there's a lot of training on raising capital and leadership and, you know, all the different things. And it turned out that we could, you know, we're a small team, new fund. We got better bang for our time by just diving in individually with each company versus having people sit in more of a, let's call it a classroom setting or a cohort type setting. So we've gone away from that at some level and now creating these industry clusters and, you know, opportunities to meet with other companies around your same size, because we have companies that are pre-revenue. And then we have companies that are doing a few million a year, and they're not necessarily going through the same challenges at the same time.
Right, right. That makes sense. And so it's more of a residency model where they live locally, and then they get guidance support from the network. That is
correct.
The backyard advantage that you're referring to. Maybe you could dig into what that is, the backyard advantage.
Yeah, the backyard advantage really is this tribe of people that care. So the 100 investors are included in the tribe. The mentors that I mentioned are included in the tribe. The corporations around the Sacramento region are a part of this tribe. And we do a good job of engaging those folks to understand their skills, their experience levels, and, you know, how they might be able to add value to our portfolio. So one of the, some of the funding has actually come from those cities. El Dorado County, in fact, has a program with the Growth Factory where they provide non-dilutive funding to not necessarily our portfolio companies, but El Dorado County companies that we pre-screen and help direct those funds. Mm. And a number of them are the Growth Factory. So I think one of our strengths is the fact that we are local and we've done a good job of engaging local leadership to to really believe in the backyard.
Yeah, I love that. And what are some of the challenges, if any, of running this kind of program out here in Sacramento?
Well, I think one of the things about Sacramento is we are a government town, as you mentioned. And so I think getting off the ground, there were certainly some people that were skeptical about something like this working in a place like Sacramento, where we're bureaucratic by nature as individuals. And, you know, with that comes this sort of stigma of we can't do this kind of thing in Sacramento. It won't work here. Well, it turns out that there's a lot of entrepreneurs in Sacramento. There's entrepreneurs that have had some success. And those are many of the investors into our fund are really successful entrepreneurs. I'm a part of the Entrepreneurs Organization, which is a worldwide organization with highly successful entrepreneurs. And so we've rallied a number of the EO members to be mentors and investors and so on. So it really can work even in a bureaucratic town like Sacramento. I think if somebody was to think about wanting to do something like this, I think there's three questions you got to get right. Number one, how compelling is your vision? And I think our vision became much, much more compelling when we got it out of my backyard and into the collective backyards of the Sacramento region. People began to see themselves in the vision. Oh, this is actually an economic development engine for the region. Oh, I can actually put some money into this effort and get a return on my investment. So as people began to see themselves in the vision, everything really changed for us. But I think also one of the things, each region has a set of challenges and a set of assets. And one of the things that I think can be overlooked is that unity can be a very, very valuable asset. So when you and your buddies, if you will, get together to do something very entrepreneurial, it can work in a way that it's, you know, everybody's not just a number writing, you know, the LPs aren't just writing checks and forgetting about it. They're saying, you know, you saw it at poker night, right? We're getting together, having fun, enjoying the idea of investing. And we thought it would be very difficult to raise our first fund, but we got our 99 investors for fund one fairly quickly. And it was, we took the approach of, let's ask for smaller checks, go with a smaller fund, build the proof of concept, and then our next fund will be a bit bigger. And one of the things that we are, I guess, contemplating now is how to take the backyard advantage outside of the Sacramento region to really develop this community. I mentioned the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs, but we're predominantly in Sacramento. But if we had these clusters, these backyards in other, let's call it underserved regions around the country or around the world that were all connected to each other, you know, we'd be so much stronger in terms of, you know, opening up these doors that I talked about. And I guess the third thing that I guess is a challenge for anybody that thinks about doing something like this, and for us as well, is, you know, asking ourselves the question, what's our commitment level? And I'm fortunate to be connected to my co-founders, Rick Spencer and Monique Brown. You know, we were already doing this. We are committed to doing this for the long haul, and finding the kind of people that can really commit, it's been a challenge for me over the last several years. But today, this inner circle, if you will, of founders, we're developing into a very strong team. And
feeds on itself too. As you have more people go through the Growth Factory, they become successful companies. It kind of feeds on itself, and you kind of spin that flywheel.
100%. And so I think in terms of the challenge, I mean, any startup is a challenge. So that's what we've done, is go through these growing pains that, let's call it, any startup might go through.
Yeah. Any noteworthy stories you can think of from the past, you know, 4 or 5 years of doing this?
Yeah, I think one of the things that was kind of, I was challenged by experts when I started my podcast. I started my podcast in 2015, and I decided to make it a local podcast around storytelling. It's called The Mark Haney Show, storytelling around success and successful entrepreneurs. And I wanted to keep it local because I wanted to share the local stories. I thought those would be the most relatable to Sacramentans. And I wished I would have had that as I was growing my businesses. I wish I would have been able to talk to people who had been there, done that. And I was more head down, butt in the air, you know, grinding it out. And so I wanted to help that out. But I was challenged by people saying, don't go local like that. That's not, when you have a podcast, this is the opportunity to go national, global. Why would you continue to, how would you build a following staying so local? It would be a small following. And I said, that's okay with me of going small. I want to have a concentrated effort. And so when we decided to launch the Growth Factory a few years later, it was actually a big benefit because the people that came in to help on the Growth Factory were people that had been on my show. They come on my show. I make a strong relationship with them. We develop a friendship. Next thing you know, we're working on the Growth Factory together. So it was a blessing in disguise, even though I didn't have the master plan at the time of, you know, building the Growth Factory. I figured I was just going to do it in my own backyard, but it's far superior to have done it the way we are.
Yeah, I love that. And that's why I started my podcast. You know, I went on someone's podcast and, you know, at the time I had 100 portfolio companies. I have 125 now. And I was like, wait, I have 100 portfolio companies I could interview, get public relations for, get social media impressions for, and just help them find customers and employees and investors by just having a podcast. So it just totally made sense. I'd love to hear, like, you've been running this podcast now for 10 years almost. Like, what are some lessons from doing
it
that?
I mean, been I just a got while. Started this year. Well, I started it as a passion project. I had joined the Entrepreneurs Organization and I saw the good work that it was that was happening there about where entrepreneurs are helping entrepreneurs. So I started it to sort of be one of those entrepreneurs helping entrepreneurs. And I didn't really have a business model behind it. And I don't know if that was the smartest thing to do or not, because really it's been a passion project. There's not a level of profitability to,
I lose money.
So, and I'm the type of guy, I'm hiring employees to help me do it because I'm lazy ineffective at a lot of tech stuff. So I brought in employees to help me figure it out. These employees, you know, obviously there's an expense, and I did it without a business model. I wasn't a venture capitalist. I wasn't an angel investor. I didn't have an online training course that I was promoting. I had nothing. I had half a dozen companies. I had like I had a security camera company still, one left over. I have a construction company. I was into real estate, you know, kind of one of these guys chasing a lot of different shiny objects, thinking I'll figure out a way to connect them all. But I had trouble connecting them all until I began talking about the 100 millionaire business partners in my backyard. And then people started saying, Mark, I want to be in the backyard. I want to be in the backyard. And as that started coming out, everything began to shift.
Yeah, that's amazing. So how do you guys select startups to work with? Like, what are some qualities, indicators you look for?
Yeah, number one, I suppose, is local. I guess that's been already mentioned.
I would imagine.
We're willing to move here, yes. Need to have some really strong presence here in Sacramento. We have a couple of companies that are not technically headquartered here, but they've got their sales offices here. And so we've made a couple of those type investments. But yeah. Basically, you got to be good in the backyard, right? So that's kind of the thing is.
Right. Because all your LPs and partners expect you to be having a local economic impact. So it's kind of like, hey, you got to be moving here, creating jobs, investing in the local economy, kind of thing. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. And the number one thing we look for is, and I'm kind of the one that maybe spends the time on this area, is I like to invest into people that I think, you know, can really move molecules and have the commitment level to see it through, because it's going to be difficult. So we invest into really the founder and the founding team for the most part, and to make sure that they're the kind of people that will push it and, you know, keep pushing through the difficult times, and also add value to the backyard. So we look at for commitment level, we look for humility, we look for authenticity and how they will be able to relate to the backyard. Will they be able to get the most out of the backyard, and can they add to the backyard advantage as well? So we look for that as well. And then this may be kind of obvious, but we invest into companies that can scale either nationally or globally so that we can get a good return for our investors.
Right. Yeah. It all comes down to that. So what's your typical check size? How big's the fund? How many investments are you going to make in fund one?
The thesis was to do 100 investments over the four-year period. We're at about 50 now, but we're a little bit over 2 years. We're not quite 2.5 years yet, but so we're a little off track, but 50 is still a good number.
That's a lot. Yeah.
So we expect to get it to 100. That's our goal. But if it ends up being 90, because we are, you know, very selective, then, you know, we may veer from that 100 company goal. Average check size really ranges from 25,000 to 100,000. Yep. We have some that have gone higher. I think our largest investment's about 1 million, maybe a little bit more.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of an outlier though. So most of them are in the, you know, we throw in a $25,000 or $50,000 check at the beginning and then reserve capital for follow-on investing.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Is there a certain percentage of the fund that you're reserving, or?
It's a little over 50%.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then, why 100 investments? Why not 50 investments or 200 investments? What was the thing?
Maybe it's marketing. I don't know. It was more like, look, we're launching something. We want to demonstrate that we're going to make an impact on the region based upon, you know, building the backyard. And so we just picked a round number and we actually modeled it out. We got the help of another local venture capital firm that has had a lot more experience than we have. Right. And we modeled it. And 100 seemed pretty reasonable with making these size checks at the beginning and still keeping a good amount for reserve. And I think our next fund will invest in follow-on funding into some of our existing portfolio companies as well. So we'll use our next fund to help support this fund as well. But this partnership with, I mentioned this other venture capital fund, they're Moneta Ventures, who you probably know. So they've acted as an advisor to us and helping us sort of get off the ground. But they're also helping us in terms of, you know, we've co-invested with them as well. So we might go, because they're an early stage investor as well. Right. So they're investing, we're investing alongside them in some cases. And then their deeper pockets, they've got a lot larger funds. So they're, you know, going in and putting a lot more money into the company and, you know, helping become kind of like a lead investor in some cases to some of our portfolio companies.
Yeah. And I think the 50% follow-on makes sense when you're investing at a very specific geographical location, because you need to go deeper and further with the existing portfolio of companies. It's not like you have the entire universe of 10 or 15,000 pre-seed fundings to look at. You have to actually, you know, you have a very specific local focus. So it would make sense that you would reserve a good portion of your capital. And it turns out, actually, I'll send you some research on this after the call, but the 100 is a magic number for early stage. I think that's about where you kind of minimize your chances of loss and maximize your chances of having a good fund. So I think that's a good strategy, actually.
Thank you.
So what's your vision for where this goes in the next 5 or 10 years?
I think the next 5 and 10 years, luckily I have a great team. And they're highly driven individuals as I am, but they're a little younger than I am. And they want to take this thing to other markets. They want to take the Growth Factory and the Backyard Advantage to other markets to continue to strengthen the connectivity of this advantage. And so we are in discussions with other regions about how we might do that. There are people that have really enjoyed seeing what we are doing. I'm in the process of writing a book about the Backyard Advantage. And so we think over the next couple of years, we'll be able to have a really solid proof of concept here in Sacramento region that could be duplicated in other areas, which ultimately strengthens. If you had two of these, that would make the advantage even stronger. If you had 10 or 20 or 30, then it becomes a really powerful force. And so we're part of some national and global communities that are very interested in having us sort of lead something like that alongside them.
Yeah, that's exciting. Why don't we close up with some rapid fire questions, if that sounds good?
Sure.
All right. So what's one technology trend you believe will significantly impact the startup world in the next 5 years that isn't AI?
That isn't AI, yeah. I think the one thing that we are seeing, and I think we're seeing it on this, you know, with this as well, is the idea that people don't need to be in the office to go to work. And I think that that's sort of a technology trend, but it's just a way of working. I think the way we go to work is going to be continue to change over the next several years. And I think it's going to be real positive. There will be some people that don't embrace that, but I think you're going to want to have that for employee morale and so on, because people want to have flexibility in the way that they go to work. And so I think that relates a little bit to technology, but it relates to the human experience.
Right. Yeah, I love that. If you could start a business in a completely different industry tomorrow, what would it be?
The one industry that I love is security. As I mentioned, I sold some security companies, and I now own a couple more security companies that I've gotten into since. And they're going well. As security cameras, we're the largest security camera integration company for casinos in the United States. So you name a casino, MGM, Caesars, and those type. Those really are, you know, that's our bread and butter. And that's a really good business. So I think security is something that's not going away. I think we're going to have a continuing need for security, physical security and cybersecurity. So I have a personal desire to continue to invest into security companies, which is a departure from venture capital, but it's a niche that I feel like could be overlooked, but I think it's going to be a growth area for years to come.
Yeah. Well, there's always room for more security. And then, you know, the black hat attacker folks out there, the nefarious actors, they try to get in, and then you got to build more, you know, better systems of security. So yeah, it's a constant arms race there.
Absolutely.
What book has profoundly shaped your approach to business?
The one that comes to mind is Essentialism. I don't know if you've heard about that book. It's about the disciplined pursuit of less. It's about staying focused. And, you know, so many times us as entrepreneurs, we ended up chasing a lot of shiny objects. And I think that creates a lack of focus. And if we can say no more often, to give us time to really dive in deeper on the best opportunities, that makes a lot of sense. And so that book has really helped shape me, because I am one of those people that gets excited and thinks I can do everything. But I think we can do almost anything, but we can't do everything.
Right. Yeah. Focus is key. What's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
My dad gave me some advice. He had a TV shop, as I mentioned, when I was a kid. Oh, right. And I knocked a refrigerator off the back of the pickup truck one time, and he came across and, you know, saw the broken refrigerator all over the place. And he said, you better surround yourself with good people, because you ain't worth a shit. And so I really do believe that nobody builds a truly great company alone, but my dad's brutal honesty really hit home for me. And so as we built out really our video advice, stores and built out these other companies, I did one of my skills, or one of my gifts, if you will, was getting people to follow the vision and come along for the ride, thinking you never know, it might work and it might be a great opportunity for all of us. So my dad's advice, even though it hurt at the time, it's paid off.
That's funny. It's like, even in that moment of anger that he had towards you, it's like, here's some advice.
Yeah, exactly.
If you could go back in time, what's one piece of advice you would give your younger self?
One of the things I started doing about 20 years ago, and this is going to sound really wacky to maybe your audience, but for me, it's like my cheat code. And I started it, we took our security cameras national. And so we had, you know, we're here on the West Coast, Pacific time. But when we opened up in New Jersey and Memphis and some of these other areas to have a broader distribution and sales channel for the entire country, I decided to start coming to work a little bit earlier, which had come at like 6 o'clock in the morning here. And so if I'm going to do that, that means I got to get up really early. So what happened
I'm on
for
like
me,
hour five of sleep at 6 a.m. I go to bed at like 1 o'clock.
Yeah. So you're like terrible. A night owl. I'm a go to bed early super night guy. Owl, yeah. But what happens for me now, that's the early to rise thing has developed into, I call it 315, the moment of truth. It's my personal advantage, my cheat code, if you will. I get up early and really remind myself of why I'm doing what I'm doing. It's kind of a meditation type time frame. And really, you know, our biggest battles are with ourselves. At least for me, it's like me versus me. And so if I can,
it always is. Yeah.
If I can get myself right, I'm a build from the inside out. So if I can get myself right, then I can help my family more appropriately and more effectively.
Yeah.
If my family's good, I'll be better off at work. If work's good, then I have something to give to the rest of the community. So I really start with myself, and I need my downtime, my alone time, if you will. In that 3:15, nobody else is up. So I spend the first 90 minutes prepping my mind, if you will, for the rest of the day. I leave at 5:20 in the morning. I go to work out. Right now I do hot yoga, and then I do CrossFit afterwards. So I like to go work out really hard right after my meditation time. And it's been effective. I wish I would have started that earlier. So that's the interesting thing. I've been doing it a long time, but gosh, it really, I've seen so many people, you know, they basically wake up in the morning and they're like, go, 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 go right off the bat. And I'm thinking, are you really at your very best? If you've barely crawled out of bed, you're rolling into the office, wiping the,
I'm not.
The stuff out of your eyes.
I wake up 15 minutes before my first call at 8:15 AM. That's when I wake up.
Yeah.
I'm totally like, not at my best.
My mentality is don't get ready, be ready. Right. So you got to be ready. So this is my mindset, get my mind right.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you played football or not. I played football, and there's the same effect before you, I guess, take the court or before you take the field. In my case, they would play the theme from Rocky, and it was yeah. And so if I can get myself, you know, fired up before I jump in the car to go to yoga or CrossFit, you know, but that takes a little work, right? That just doesn't happen when you roll out of bed just because it did. You know, all the stuff from last night and everything is coming in. You've got to sort all that out and be reminded of what you want to accomplish in your life, what your purpose is, and, you know, what your philosophies are. And some of that takes a little bit of work. And so I think most people don't create that downtime for themselves. And for me, it's been a lifesaver. And I really think it's been a big key to us progressing over the last several years.
Yeah, plus one for meditation. I've been meditating for 20 plus years, and I've been doing transcendental meditation, as anyone who listens to this podcast has probably heard me say every episode, which I wish I found 20 years ago. I've been doing it for about 3 years now, and that 20 minutes twice a day is, it really lets the stress out and finds that inner peace and that, you know, that inner calmness, you know?
Yeah, and the only thing I would say that I guess rivals that is going to get your ass kicked at CrossFit or yoga or something, really hot yoga,
like
something physically or go play a full court basketball for an hour and a half in the morning. And
especially
your stress
40s,
is gone.
You're like, okay, you want to feel bad about yourself. Yeah. Go play in your 40s basketball. That's what I'm about to do at 4:30 today.
When you get a good workout, anybody who's listening out there, you know, when you get a good workout, you're like, okay, whatever I might've been stressed out before about is behind me.
Yeah, my wife got me the Tonal, it's almost 2 years ago now. You know, just an exercise machine on the wall.
Oh,
it's amazing. So I always get my 20 or 30 minutes of weight training every single day, and that just, you know, you just feel good, right? You just have more energy, and there's never an excuse. It's like right there, and I don't have to drive to the gym and 20 minutes, you know, and I can fit it in. Oh, somebody cancels a meeting. You know, all the meetings seem to be 30 minutes these days. Great, I'll just go to my Tonal instead.
Good for you.
So what's last question? What's your favorite local business in Sacramento outside of the ones that you've worked with or invested in?
Outside the Growth Factory, I did invest into a company called Bennett's Restaurants. That's a restaurant chain. Your audience may have heard of Paul Martin's. They've got like 10 or 12 locations around the country. So the founder of Paul Martin's left and started something. His name is Brian Bennett. He started Bennett's. And their first restaurant was in Roseville, and we basically threw a party in my backyard and raised the first million for that restaurant. And I lived pretty close to that. Now he's got three restaurants, and I like that one because it's like, for me, it's a little bit like walking into Cheers. I roll in and they know me and that kind of thing. So I appreciate that one in a way that is real personal to me. You mentioned that wasn't invested into, but I think that's one that's a pretty relatable type business, even though, you know, so I had invested doing angel investments and I wasn't just investing into tech companies at the time, growth factories, tech companies predominantly.
Right.
We don't really invest into restaurants, but I still like investing into people. And so I invested into Brian Bennett and Bennett's. If there are any Sacramento listeners, it's a great place. I mean, they've got a great menu and it's great service. It's a good place to go.
Nice. I need to check it out. I've definitely heard of Paul Martin, so I'm anxious.
Yeah, it's a little bit like Paul Martin's, but yeah, it's got some of that same type of food, I guess, American type food.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for coming on the program. This was awesome to get to know you better and the Growth Factory. I look forward to collaborating more in the future.
Yeah, Brian, thank you. And appreciate coming on the show and look forward to collaborating with you as well.
Thanks so much.
You bet.